Hello and welcome to another episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carlson. I am Kieran O'Connor and I'm joined by the man himself, Mike Carlson. Mike, how are you?
You're literally with Mike Carlson.
I am, yeah. And I said my name. You know, someone got in touch with me a few weeks ago and they said, you know, you've done like three episodes of the pod and you never introduced yourself. I was like, no.
Well, yeah. You remember, I said, you know, we ought to at least advertise all three names. I hate being the standard bearer in that sense, but up to the responsibility, my once broad shoulders are going
Absolutely.
To take it. And what a weekend, though. I'm glad to see the NFL has embraced flag football so heavily, because every game I saw was just flag after flag after flag, or no flag on occasion. Yeah, I really think it's getting out of control, and you can sometimes go partisan. I went partisan with the Eagles, even though I'm not an Eagles fan by any means, simply because it just seemed to me like they were getting so badly done by in the fourth quarter of that game by the officials. But I mean, Buffalo, New England, there were 19 accepted penalties. Buffalo had 11 of them and the Patriots had 8, and each had about 90 yards in penalties. It's not so much the officials' fault as the fact that the big penalties in the NFL, offensive holding, defensive holding, especially in the secondary, and pass interference, are all judgment calls where the rules are parsed and parsed down more and more and more, you know. And secondarily, the does he have possession? Does he have the foot down? Possession's always a tricky one. Has he made a quote unquote football move? They're all so open. There's zero consistency, and they take place on every play. You can literally throw a flag on every play legitimately. So, you know, I just think it's an issue the NFL at some point really has to address. And maybe for one season, which would result in more flags probably, but you enforce the rules strictly and you stop giving interpretations that are supposed to make them clearer, but actually make them fuzzier. You know, you can't, after 5 yards, get your hands off the receiver, period.
It's interesting, though, because we do see that for those in the Premier League, a lot of the time in the summer, the referees go away and they say, right, they tell the clubs at start season, we're going to be much more stricter on pulling a corners, which was one this season, or talking back to the ref, which was one a couple of seasons ago. And you get these mad cards and penalties and red cards in like late August into early September. But then by November, they've just gone back to the way they were because they've just forgot that they told everyone they were going to be strict on corners and all this stuff. So I wonder if that would happen as well. Like it'll be, because we saw that with the taunting penalties. If you remember when they first brought taunting in,
yeah,
it became quite a thing. Yeah, and now it's not as
they
much.
They periodically go back to do that. Although the hip drop tackle was the big one last year and we haven't heard it. I haven't seen one called, but obviously I don't watch every game. But we haven't heard a word about hip drop tackles this season.
But there was certainly a taunting call not given in the game in the Spurs stadium the other day. I can't remember exactly who it was, but one of the players basically got up and spun the ball and shouted in his face, like literally shouted as hard as he could into his face because he got the first down. And the referee is standing right there. And I did see a couple people saying like, that was definitely a taunting call last season. You know, I mean, it's as much taunt as you can get. People who are listening will notice that John Bath is not with us this week. Unfortunately, John couldn't make the recording. I am, because he doesn't like the joke, not going to say he's visiting Epstein's Island, because he really doesn't like that joke and hated it all the times I said it before. So, of course, I'm not going to say it this time.
He's in Cork. He's in Cork. That's bad enough.
Some sort of marketing conference or something.
In the kingdom.
Let me just let you know some things, Mike, over the weekend. For just the third time in the last decade, three underdogs have over a touchdown won outright in a single week. They were the 49ers, the Titans, and, of course, the Patriots. All were 7.5. After we talking about how underdogs weren't doing very well for the last number of weeks, underdogs went 9-5 against the spread and all nine covered. Also won their game outright. That's the 49ers, Cowboys, Panthers, Broncos, Bucks, Titans, Commanders, Patriots, and Jags. Don't know when you'll ever see that again.
We better not, because I straight up, my straight up picks went 5-9.
Yeah, it was a tough weekend for it, like it really
Th
was.
th this weekend, and in the first, I can tell you, in the first 4 weeks of this season, I had been cruising along. I was thinking, boy, you know, it's a shame I don't have more exposure here, because I'm really cruising along. I was 48, 15, and 1 for the
Wow.
first 4 weeks of the season. I was 5-9 last week. It was unbelievable, which is great. I mean, I love upsets, and I think we've got a couple of coaches who've got to be, their heads have already got to be on the chopping block. Jonathan Gannon didn't do himself any good at all in with
Well, his
the
players didn't.
Cardinals.
His
Yeah,
players
well,
didn't
they
help
threw
him.
the. Well, he also, when Amari DiMarcato came back to the bench after dropping that ball just before he was about to score a 72-yard touchdown, Gannon apparently hit would be an exaggeration if you watch the
Well, he did hit him.
applied a hand to him, and he's been fined $250,000
I didn't read he'd been fined for
on that
that.
one. Yeah, I mean, that's what happens. I've seen it before. And I think you also have to wonder about Mike McDaniel in Miami. They looked so soft as they let that lead evaporate to Carolina and gave up so many yards to Rico Dowdle. And as I said, they always say Tua Tagovailoa when he throws a pass. And at one point in the game, one of the announcers said, "And that was too high by Tua." And I think that should be his name now. It should be like Tua High, Tagovailoa, because so many of his passes just sail right over the receivers' heads.
In fairness to him, he's had some injury issues, and you might want to wonder if he should be on the field. I mean, if those some of those injuries have cost him. Can I give best NFL teams against the spread? So there are three teams to watch out
Sure.
for. They are the Colts, the Lions, and the Jags. We will talk about the Jags later on. They're 4-1. Teams to really avoid, worst teams, Dolphins, Bills, Broncos. Bengals are in
Yeah.
there. Bengals are obviously in there as well. They've got a few hammerings. Yeah, so crazy, crazy week. Now, with John not here, we thought we'd go into the mailbox because we do get some emails with some questions. I got to pull them up here now.
I
I've already
have
forgotten.
one.
Oh,
I
yeah,
have
go.
one from a J a BJ a BJ Jalf from Cork in Ireland, who
Where you were going
asks,
with that one, I gotta say.
what will the trade of Joe Flacco to the Bron to the Bengals mean for Cleveland? I say I don't care what it means for Cleveland, although Shedeur Sanders was aghast on the sidelines while Dylan Gabriel was playing so well for the Browns, kind of like completely disinterested in the team. And he obviously wanted Gabriel to fail so he would get his chance. But Joe Flacco, I would not be surprised if he stepped right in Cincinnati. You know,
Yeah.
people will say, well, he doesn't know Zach Taylor's system, and the response to that is it doesn't matter. unless they clean up their line, Zach Taylor doesn't have a system. It's like get back there and just get rid of the ball as quickly as you can.
But Browning played not like he played quite well in the now the game was gone, three interceptions in the first half. But
Yeah.
he came out and he found Ja'Marr Chase and he found a few like
Well,
they, I'd say
yeah.
they had a comeback, but they certainly like
Hey.
padded the score by the end of it.
Yeah, it's garbage time. In that game, and you know, Browning has played well. He played well the last time Burrow was out, you know, but they had a better line that year. They gave him some time, and they've got the weapons. But you know, as we see with a number of teams in this league, if you don't have the line, the weapons don't matter. You know, if you can't get him the ball, you can have the best receiver in the game.
Okay. Will I give you some of the questions? We've got three that we've picked
Yeah.
out.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's have a look. Look. Sean Hennessy asks, is the Geno Smith experiment already over?
Good timing, because that's basically what I just said. If you don't have a good line, then your quarterback doesn't have a great chance to make plays. I doubt if it's over because I don't know what they have. You know, I don't see that they've got anything in the hopper to replace him. And Pete Carroll probably still has a bit of faith in him. But I think certainly the Raiders will be looking at quarterbacks in what this year ought to be a fairly deep quarterback draft. And then, of course, there are. I mean, if you need a quarterback, there are a couple of guys still hanging around who are available if you're willing to pay the price, like Kirk Cousins. Jimmy G is still a backup, but he's an injury risk as well. So, you know, as bringing him in as a starter might not be the best thing. But, someone next year will make a run at Cousins, obviously, and it could be the rate. It could be the Raiders as easily as anyone else.
Okay. Rob Brady asks, what's going on with the Chiefs? And I actually, do you know, before you even answer my, I have a
Sure.
stat that I picked out. So Chiefs in one score games last season were 11-0, and then this season are 0-3, which I'm not going to say the coin has just flipped for them a little bit, but it does seem like they're struggling to close out games that they kind of shut
It,
down
yeah,
last year.
I think that's a really good point because Kelce is not a game breaker anymore. I mean, he's not the go-to target that he was. He wasn't last year to the same extent, but they had other targets. And the receivers don't really have that surefire first down getter, surefire red zone receiver. You know, Worthy, Tyquan Thornton, maybe Juju, but Juju's always a 50-50 proposition. But Worthy and Tyquan are both downfield guys, not do a short hitch and or a slant across the middle to get them the touchdown. And for some reason, Andy still seems, maybe it's his line that he's considering, but he still seems reluctant to go and put more chips on the running game. Mahomes is their leading rusher. Pacheco runs well at times, but they really don't seem willing to do anything with that. I think they'd be a team who could use one more receiver, who not someone like off the scrap heap. And when Rashee Rice comes back, that could make a big difference for them because Rice is an across the middle kind of receiver, dependable in that sense. So give them some time there. Although they couldn't close out Jacksonville defensively, which was, the big thing, the real difference in that game was Devin Lloyd's interception. Reminded me of a pick six that Brady threw against Denver. I think it was Champ Bailey, and Ben Watson was their tight end. And there's a great video showing the pass goes to the right-hand corner of the end zone. Champ Bailey intercepts it, almost just like Lloyd, heads up the sideline. Mahomes did a kind of flop at his feet, hoping he would trip over him. Brady did almost exactly the same thing, and then he breaks one tackle and he's gone. Ben Watson was on the other side of the field. He was lined up at tight end on the left side and had run and out. He takes a perfect angle diagonally across the field, and Champ Bailey was one of the fastest guys in the NFL at that point. And he chases down Bailey and pushes him out just before the pylon. No, sorry, he pushes him out just before the pylon, pushes him, and the ball goes over the pylon and out of bounds. It should have been a touchback, and it shouldn't have been a touchdown, but they gave him the touchdown. But it was one of the most amazing defensive plays I've ever seen.
Final one, who sends it? Alex Masterson. After Monday Night Football, what are you thinking now about the Patriots? You kind of wrote off any sort of playoff chances when we did speak about them in the season preview. But their record is pretty good now.
It's 3-2.
One against the divisional, taking, you know.
Yeah, I probably was a little bit too harsh on them, but when I evaluate that game, I mean, a big difference was there was no Ed Oliver, and in the second half there was no Matt Milano. Stevenson fumbled again, and for some reason he was in the lineup on the final drive. And when they had first down, in good position, 34-yard line, I think. Stevenson went for no gain. May got sacked for no gain. Fortunately, not for a loss, because it left them kicking a 52-yard field goal. And I don't know what Borgalis would have done with a longer one. I didn't think their offensive line played okay, not convincingly against a better team. That the receivers, apart from Diggs, who was all involved in a revenge game here, are still not convincing, really. I don't think Boutte is a number two. Mac Hollins, I love as a player, but I don't think he's a number two either. I think they still need some work in the secondary, although the pieces are pretty much there. Although they've lost one of their three safeties, and is it Duggar they let go? They're missing, so they don't have a built-in replacement for that. So I think it was very, very encouraging that they could win on the road in prime time. That would, to me, also be the Vrabel effect. And I think what's happening too is that Josh McDaniels and Drake May are starting to mesh. I think the first couple of weeks you saw that kind of reluctance to call too many challenging plays for May, but they're kind of wrapping, not racking, cranking it up a little bit each week. And the fact that they would do that against the Bills to me was interesting, because I think McDaniels understands the Bills' defense, which is largely zone, play prevent, don't give up big plays. And he was able to, keep May on track to pick it apart, as it were. So yeah, I think that's positive. I take back some of the things I said. Not all, but
Not at all.
we'll
Well, they're
let that
3-2
ride.
now. I think I said that they'd won against the division, but they have two, don't they? Actually, because they've beaten Miami as well. So they're two against
They
divisional
beat
rival.
who's the yes, they beat Miami. They should have beaten Pittsburgh, but that's not divisional. Their schedule is very easy the rest of the way, most of the rest of the way.
Which is interesting because I think the line on them was 7.5 games. And I think we all thought that they would lose, or sorry, win less than 8 games. But obviously, having won three of their first five, if you went under on that, you might be starting to sweat quite substantially.
I think theirs was the second easiest, and the 49ers was the easiest, based on the team's records last year.
Actually, the 49ers' easy schedule comes up a lot and during their games when co-commentators are talking about them, which I've never really found. But it's like one of these things that we all said at the start of the season, oh, the 49ers have a very easy schedule. Now, every time the 49ers play, feels almost like it's a monkey on their back a little bit as well, because even when they go behind, everyone's like, well, they've got a very easy schedule. And you're like, all right,
Yeah.
lads, we still have to win.
But
Like,
you have to take it with a grain of salt, which nobody does in the punditry world. For example, they're playing Jacksonville this week. We'll talk about that game shortly. And Jacksonville's a much better team this year than their schedule last year. So it's not, that becomes not an easy part of your schedule.
I haven't been, yeah. Thanks for those questions. Obviously, keep them coming. There is an email on the description of the pod. And obviously, you can contact Mike over Twitter or myself over Twitter or John Balfe. But thanks for those. It's always great to hear from people. And that's like the third week in a row we've had some questions in and stuff like that. So great. To Thursday night football, the Philadelphia Eagles head to New York, as we know. A really hard place to go these days, the Giants or the Jets. It's 2-7 about the Philadelphia Eagles. The New York Giants are 29-10. 7.5 is the spread. 40.5 is the over-under. I kind of feel like you think Philly were a little bit boned at the weekend, Mike, and maybe were a little unlucky.
I think they were more than a little unlucky, but had the calls gone the way I thought they should, we probably would have seen a fantastic finish. I really did think Goddard was interfered with, right, 3 yards, 4 yards short of the goal line with 9 seconds left, which would have set up one play from the four. Or whatever, for the game. But worse than that was the call on Bourne, for unnecessary roughness. When someone's bringing a guy down from behind and the guy is still flopping his way forward, he's down. his knees were down, but he's still kind of, you know, like a rugby league player trying to get back up on his feet after the tackle. And he didn't go in leading with the head. He didn't hit him hard. You know, there was no real intent to hurt or injure. And I just thought, given the situation in the game, it was a late-ish flag. You know, someone's thinking about it and then saying, what the hell? I thought that was incredibly unfair. You know, it was almost as if they were reacting to a script. Having said that, the Eagles should have been able to put that game away. They're a better team. They've got a few problems. I think they're light in the secondary. They've had a couple injuries up front on the D line, and they really lack another target for Jalen Hurts. And they didn't run anybody enough, but they didn't run Barkley enough. You know, they traded for Tank Bigsby. Use him. You know, you don't want to get Barkley hurt. You want to reduce his load. Fine. Use Tank Bigsby then. You know, Shipley, I think they were going to give Shipley a bigger role before he got hurt because he catches the ball so well. But, you know, they've only got Goddard and two receivers, and that's it. And they really don't get AJ Brown the ball enough either. AJ's got a good complaint. But they're basically using him as a one-trick pony. You
Yeah,
know,
he seems to be boiling
get
on the
him
sidelines.
downfield.
You know, I think if they go into a bit of a losing run, I think you could see AJ and the boys starting to really comment on how they're being played. Like, because they, like, it's such a weird thing. They're not using their best wide receiver in the best way, and they're not using their best running back in the best way. And you kind of like, this is how you won a Super Bowl, lads. Why are you tinkering so much with the game plan? It's a strange
I'm
one.
gonna take a wild guess here,
Go for it.
because I haven't seen enough of their film to say. But I think Tyler Steen is a disappointment for them at right guard. It doesn't look like they trust him to play to run inside zone, where he would be alone blocking or whatever. He's had a couple of penalties. I like him. I liked him coming out of college. I thought he was a great pickup by the Eagles, even as a tackle, right tackle, who could then switch to guard. But I just get this feeling. I can't even say this for sure, but I think that they're hesitating a little bit on that and on Barkley, because you know Barkley's big runs for the most part are inside runs that break outside, because he sees holes so well, and he if he gets the one key second level block, he can be gone for big yardage. That hasn't really happened this year. And
No,
maybe they
he's not
just
broke away enough.
simply need, yeah, maybe they just simply have to run him more. But I mean, they're a much better team than the Giants, obviously. They're going to pose problems for Dart. Their weakest part of the team right now is probably the secondary. I think, you know, they're, the two rookies last year are still really good, but they're not as strong at the other corner, and they need to really play a corner set and at slot play a safety at slot corner. So I think the Giants, being what they are probably good to go as a cover here.
That's brave.
It's a big probably a better bet, maybe the over. Don't do both.
Okay. The second of the London games takes place on Sunday. Obviously, Mike didn't know about some of the issues. We haven't touched on the London game too much. But obviously, the favourites, the Vikings, won. It covered a very low line of 35.5. In the end, only just, I would say as well, considering it was two
Only
touchdowns
just.
and yeah, and there was two touchdowns in the first quarter, which you were like, because I backed the over in it, and I was like, boom, yeah, 14 points in 12 minutes, this is sailing. And then with 3 minutes to go in the bloody game, it hasn't covered yet. But Broncos at Jets is the second game. There was a lot of issues, Mike, with the with what I believe is the NFL One Pass, which is the new way of getting into some events in the UK. It wasn't used at the Dublin game, not too sure why. but problems. And then I believe Ticketmaster, some in some way, shape, or form, went down as well. Probably with so many people trying to access it in the same area, so people couldn't get into the game. So fingers crossed that's been solved. And really, like, it's 2025. Like, how is this still happening?
Well,
we have the
a lot of
technology,
these
you know.
things, we have the technology. A lot of these things are, they're like the elephant built by committee. Remember when they went to DAZN with Red Zone and Game Pass, they had a lot of problems in the first 2 years, really, mostly around billing, but also around access. The feed was hard to get. The quality was bad, and I think that's probably what's going on here. It's like it growing pains or earth pains, kind of like that show where the families are riding the bucking bronco and OC's watching them ride the bucking bronco on the early shows, on the early show, the early game on Sundays. But yeah, it's one of those things where you just say, fix it. No point in saying, why didn't you test it more? Or, did you test it with more than three people trying to get into the game at once, up at the stadium? Maybe the readers weren't working well. It's not necessarily that part of the system. It could be another. But it's really unacceptable. And I do hear that they are giving partial refunds to people who are standing out there
Yeah, and
through the
that
whole
is
fourth quarter.
definitely needed. This one is the Denver Broncos taking on the New York Jets. It's 1-4 about the Denver Broncos, 11-4 the Jets. 7-point spread for the Broncos, 43.5 is the over-under. That stands out, obviously, that they're 1-4 the Denver Broncos. And like, I think everybody is talking about kind of the Colts and the Jags being the two really surprising teams. But the Broncos were, a hair's breadth away from beating the Colts, and they've looked pretty good all season. So, are you surprised by their good start to the season as much as the others?
Not really. I don't think it's that good a start because I thought before the season they were going to be, both they and the Chargers were being pushed as real contenders to take on the Chiefs this year because we all knew or suspected the Chiefs would not be as good this year as they were last year. And they would be vulnerable if either the Chargers or the Broncos improved over last season. More people, I think, thought the Chargers would improve more. They looked at what they'd done in the offseason, and plus they have Justin Herbert, and the Broncos were working with Bo Nix, who's still a work in progress, but you can see what Sean Payton is doing with him. Kind of like McDaniels and McDaniels in May, although May is closer to Justin Herbert than he is to Bo Nix, but bringing him along within the system, and opening things up for him a bit. And I think he had some problems at the start. I thought, as I said, I thought Denver were lucky to beat Philadelphia. I think the Eagles kind of gave that game away, in a sense, beyond the officiating. But I'm a little surprised that Denver's doesn't get the half a point that the Eagles got against the Giants, because I'll call them, they're not as good as Philly, and the Jets aren't as good as the Giants, which is saying an awful lot of negative. Again, I think the Jets MVP could be Nick Folk. Dallas beat the Jets in New York convincingly with an offensive line that I think only had one starter playing in the same place as the start of the season, and a couple of guys who just, hadn't played at all, and filled in. And if the Jets, whose biggest strength is supposedly their defensive front, can't do that to the Giants, I don't see them really doing that to Denver. I mean, can't do that to Dallas. I don't see them doing that to Denver. Now, again, when you're betting the London game, don't take anything for granted. The team can, we've seen teams come out flat for a half, you know, and give up big plays, things like that.
Did you see
What's the
what
over?
the Kelce brothers said about the Dublin versus London games on their podcast?
I'll bet you Jason loved Dublin.
He said that the Dublin games were more akin to what an actual NFL game was because there was a huge amount of people who traveled from Pittsburgh and Minnesota to make it much more. Whereas he felt that the London games from the start were a kind of a celebration of NFL and almost feel like at times he's felt the London games feel a little bit like a carnival of football or like it's not a properly intimidating atmosphere, which I don't know. I didn't think the Dublin one was, it had a lot of Pittsburgh people traveled for the Dublin game. I'll give them that.
I think the travel probably was much bigger, the package travel for the game. And I can see loads of people, especially with the Irish connection with Rooney, the Rooneys and the Maras.
And it's the
You
first
know, I
one,
can
and who
s
knows how many they'll do. Whereas the London game is a long
true.
established thing. I mean, I went to the second, first or second London game so long ago now. It's well over 10, 11 years now. So it's probably not as many people are traveling from the United States for the London game because, you know,
No.
it's more for that.
No. And you know, once in a lifetime kind of thing, to combine them. The London game has always had, it's a subpar Super Bowl kind of atmosphere in that you get fans from all the teams in small numbers mostly. Occasionally you get a team. Tampa back in the early days was quite popular. New England was quite popular, so you get a small contingent, a small but not, you know, meaningful contingent. And I think Jason Kelce's right. You don't really get a huge home field visiting field group for either team that's actually in there. Plus, you had in the early days, you had a lot of noise being made, encouraged by the stadium at the wrong times. You know, they'd have people yelling and cheering while they were doing the cadence to for the snap, you know, and they'd be cheering everything, not, you know, sometimes things that weren't to be cheered. And I think that's disappeared in London now because much of the audience knows the game really well. And I think Dublin Irish viewers here are in the same position. They've been watching the games every bit as long as the British viewers. So most of the fans know the game pretty well, and they know when to applaud and when to cheer, you know, and when not to.
It's interesting, actually, and we move off this now because we've done. But the games, so the international games are being shown on Irish television over here now for the first time. So they used to take the feed from ITV, but now Virgin Media over here have their own presenter and Irish pundits. And I found it very noticeable. I didn't see the Dublin games, obviously, it was added, but I watched the London game. And I found it very noticeable that there was no real intro to NFL or kind of explainers. They like reviewed it and analyzed it as if you already understood all the rules. So I think we have moved away because I remember you and I worked obviously with Betfair for many years, and we would always get around the start of season and the Super Bowl. They would ask us to go and do an explainer. I don't know how many explainers I've done with you. For it. And then, like, I remember one year just saying, no, we're not doing that anymore. We've done it like 5 years in a row with. They haven't like figured it out by now. Fuck them. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah,
Like,
well, it's true. The punters who are betting on the games obviously know enough to feel comfortable betting on the games. And I used to have this argument with Channel 5, with Channel 4, with even with Sky when I did mostly NFL Europe for Sky, but I did a couple of seasons of NFL with BBC, and I just said it's pointless. You can explain what a first down is, and next week you're going to have a whole different set of viewers, and you're going to explain it again. You know, if you, I can do it in 30 seconds comparing it to rugby league, and then let the people watch and pick up, you know, pick up the nuance as it goes along, you know, penalties, that kind of stuff. Because the in-game announcers explain the penalties more often than not. You know, oh, he was offside. See, he moved before the snap. Okay, now if you're anyone who watches sport regularly, you'll understand what that meant, and you register it registers in your head. You don't need it explained again normally.
I feel it's interesting because I have in Channel 5 and I haven't seen it. I don't get Channel 5 here. Channel 5 have slightly gone down the more campish route. I saw that they had a
Well,
booking Bronco.
that's what I was talking about with the booking Bronco and
Oh, that's what
on
you meant.
the
I was wondering what you meant. I was like, what?
on the early game, does it work? Must work for the people whose bright idea it was, but it doesn't seem to work for much of the audience.
Yeah.
They're obviously, you know, because it's 7:30, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock here, they're obviously trying to draw in a younger audience than the 18 to 25 kind of that most of those kind of shows are usually aimed at. There's only really been one good one, which was the Whisper Show with Mark Chapman and OC and Jason, you know, which got a pretty good mix of actual analysis and real entertainment in terms of the banter between the three guys and the, you know, the reaction to stuff that happened during
Well,
the
I've
previous
met
weekends.
Chappers a few times. I think Chappers could have banter with a block of ice. Like he's
He's one of
he's
the
one of
greats.
the true
Yeah,
greats, yeah.
he's truly a great host and presenter. Did you say the over-under on this game was 43-5?
Oh, Mike, I've moved off it. Hold on one second. I went to another game. Yes, I did. I said it was 43-5.
Yeah, it started the week at 41, so I think people were looking at the over here as being respectable. If it goes up another point or so, I would probably take the under.
Okay. 6 o'clock game that we like. Seattle Seahawks take on the Jacksonville Jaguars, who we've mentioned is one of the surprise packages so far this season. The Seahawks are even money. The Jags are 4 to 5. 1.5 is the spread. Obviously, in favor of the Seahawks, 46.5 is the over under. We touched a little bit on the Jags earlier on, Mike, but I mean of the two kind of them and the Colts have been the surprise packages. Do you agree with that analysis
Oh,
that I'm putting down?
absolutely. That went overnight this season from being the worst division in the NFL to being one of the more competitive ones. And depending on whether Houston keeps up, you know, they beat a very bad Baltimore team badly, 44-10, I think it was. You know, so if Houston now it makes the turnaround, you've got three decent teams there. And could, you know, you could have two playoff teams out of that without too much problem, I think.
Wow, never said that, would you?
No, it shows the difference coaching makes. I mean, look what Steichen has done with Indianiel Jones. You know, he looks great. Jonathan Taylor looks great. Their offensive line is better. You know, 3 years ago or so, 4 years ago, they had the best offensive line in the league. And they use it well, and I think the same thing's true in Jacksonville. Liam Cohen, new head coach, finally you're seeing Trevor Lawrence play with a little bit of consistency and control, rather than kind of like first down fails, second down fails, play comes in for third down, and Trevor Lawrence just tries to make something work. You know, Urban Meyer was obviously a setback for him. Doug Peterson was probably not focused, not fo focus is the wrong word, probably not demanding enough for him, or working hard enough, you know, to say, look, you've got a lot of natural ability, but you can't rely on your natural ability. You've got to use your natural ability in these ways, which I think is what Liam Cohen is the kind of thing he's doing. So I buy into Indy. And I buy into Arizona as being the Keystone Cops of the NFL. When you watch Kyler Murray being knocked over by
Of all.
a snap that hits him in the head, in the face. I mean, to me, it wasn't the last straw because it came in the middle. But to me, that was kind of like a last straw. I think on the road, I like Indy. It's less than a touchdown. I think the over could be in play here, even though it's 47 and a half.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm kind of going all in on Indy for this one.
So you think Indy, and what about, sorry, what about Jag Seahawks? Did you, what do you think of that one? 1.5.
Oh geez, yeah, I'm talking the wrong game.
Well, no,
My eyes slipped up. My eyes slipped up my, you know, the list, and you'd said something about Indy. Yeah. Jag Seahawks. I like the Jags at home. It's almost a pick 'em game. And Seattle, I think Seattle showed a lot good last weekend. You know, that game against Tampa was winnable for them. Kind of a fluke at the end where Sam Darnold's pass hits a defender in the head, going out. It wasn't actually, you know, like a hand on it. It was a head. I think I'd take the Jags giving the point and a half. I
Okay.
also think the over is a good bet in this one.
Yeah, well, and speaking of Sam Darnold and overs, etc., Tampa Bay are at home against the 49ers at sorry, so Sam Darnold obviously lost to the Buccaneers. That's where I was going with that. San Francisco 49ers are at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 5-4 at the 49ers, 8-13 Bucs, 3 points spread, 47.5 is the over under. We've talked about a lot about Baker Mayfield on this show because, you know, we kind of say is the policy at Tampa just to throw it up. I mean, he saw a lot of that in the Seattle game, and he
Yeah.
delivered. I mean, he's one of his passes was, I think, 65 yards or something. It was, and it was the same. Someone compared it. Sorry, and I know we're going off. It was the same throw that technically Mahomes had to make at the end of the Chiefs game, and he really didn't put much power behind, and it didn't get there.
Yeah.
And Baker Mayfield just darted it straight into the chest of a guy, like.
Yeah,
When he cooks, he cooks.
he's always been talented, and you know, he's on his third offensive coordinator in 3 years. And you know, his play the last 2 years has gotten both the other guys head coaching jobs. I'm not being facetious about this. I Canales and Cohen, I think, have both been propelled into the head coaching spotlight by Baker's play. And part of it involves letting Baker be Baker, which means you do a lot of moving pocket. You do a lot of rollouts. You don't let him get trapped in the pocket, which is the defensive strategy generally against Baker, what Tom Brady called caging him up. But he's also very good in the pocket. You know, one or two steps going forward. You have to shut the door. Teams try to shut the door on the outside. But you need to shut the door up the middle too, because that's actually where his first attempted escape usually comes. If he hasn't rolled out, you know, turned his back and go. And as soon as he's turned around and scrambling, I think he's got the best downfield vision of any of the really good scrambling quarterbacks. You know, he's able to direct traffic, and he's been throwing accurately and as you say, downfield quite well. So, you know, he's turned into a decent enough, not decent enough is not the right word. He's turned into a really valuable weapon. And you know, if I don't know when do they get Bucky Irving back?
I'm
Because
looking
when they've
at.
got him, you have to defend the run a bit
He
more
was
than
pretty
Seattle
close
had
to being
toward the
back.
back.
On the Baker, he threw last week for 379 yards and two touchdowns. The week before, 289 for two touchdowns, and the week before that, 233 for for one touchdown.
If it continues like this, you can make a very good case for him being the MVP.
Absolutely. He's out for 2 weeks,
Although,
Bucky Irving. He's out for next 2 weeks.
yeah,
I don't know if
that
they're on a bye during any
discounts.
of that, are they? Might be. We'll check that again.
Yeah, that discounts their defense too, which is still really good. And Todd Bowles is a really good defensive coach, you know, and they got Vita
Sam
Vea
Darnold
in the
seemed to
middle.
shred it enough on Sunday now.
Yeah, well, they're going to, you know. Seattle's a solid team. I'm not taking anything away from them. I don't think San Francisco's a solid team. I think San Francisco's doing a lot of it with smoke and mirrors on both sides of the ball because they've got two good coaches. I mean, Saleh might not have been a great head coach for the Jets, but as a defensive coordinator for San Francisco, he's really good, and he's playing with second, a lot of second choice players. I saw they brought in, I think, seven defensive linemen for tryouts for looks because they're so short staffed there. And Mac Jones is exactly what I think Shanahan wanted when he traded up to get the second or third pick in the draft, intending to draft Mac Jones before someone else, either in man, either John Lynch or one of the owners, fell in love with Trey Lance. And I've said this before, he looks like Brock Purdy. He plays like Brock Purdy. You can see the coaching there. And I said on that show, it's like watching Bill Walsh coach Joe Montana. Not during the game, but in here's the steps, Joe, for this play. One, two, three, this way. The third step a little bit to the right. Look to the right. We want this play to go to the left, but look to the right. Pretend your first read is this guy. Then turn left. And if you don't have that your first read, go to the middle where your second read should be open. And you can see them doing that. It's almost mechanical. But I don't think that's going to work as well against Tampa. I like Tampa in this one. And I might well, it's hard to go under with Baker.
It is. It's very dangerous.
Baker, the point maker. It's 47-5. It all depends on how much help he gets from San Francisco. And I think he can get 14 or 20 points from them.
Okay. Sunday Night Football, the Detroit Lions ahead to the Kansas City Chiefs. The Lions are 11 to 10. The Kansas City Chiefs are 8 to 11. 2.5 is the spread. 52.5 is the over under. We've talked a lot about Chiefs, right? Just on the Lions. Considering what they were last year with breakout, and by the way, I think I saw that there are more teams scoring 40 plus points this season in the NFL than there's ever been. It's the like the there's a lot of high scoring teams, and maybe that's got to do with the new kickoff rules, which I know you and Donald Trump don't like, your buddy Donald. But one of the trends of last year was the Lions. Giving teams a shellacking. And it doesn't seem to be happening this year. They are, I think when we on the game on Sunday, where we were talking about obviously the Browns coming back into it a bit, they're kind of playing within themselves a little bit, the Lions. It just doesn't
And that's an
feel like
interesting,
them.
it's an interesting point, which may have more to do with the loss of so many coaches, like adjusting to a new offensive coordinator and stuff. They seem to have rebuilt because they lost two starters from their offensive line, but they seem to have rebuilt that pretty well. And Goff has functioned absolutely brilliantly in a couple of games. He's had one or two where the pressure. Because the first way you beat the Lions is you try to get in Goff's face as much as possible, and I mean this game fascinates me. I find it really hard to call. Like most games with Mahomes at home, especially, there's that kind of in Mahomes we trust feeling that the Chiefs will pull it out. They'll hang in there. They'll force a mistake and get some points, one score out of Detroit, and then it'll be a 3-point game with a minute to go, and Mahomes will take them down, for a score. And I can see that happening. 51.5 is the week's highest over under, but I still
52
think
now
that
I
one
have on Betfair at
up to
52.
52. Yeah. I
Yeah,
think
I like
that
a
one's
51.
probably still within reach. It's a task. It'll be a task for the Lions. I see it being a kind of 30-27 game, in that kind of roundabout 20, could be 28-21, which you lose. So I'd be careful with it. Detroit's getting 2.5 points, and I find that tempting. I hate 2.5s. 2.5s are tempting, but you really want three. In
Maybe by
fairness, but
game time.
since when are bookies fair, right?
This is true. This is true.
Yeah, but I would lean toward Detroit in the points, and lean toward going over. But I, like I say, I'm not convinced. I don't really have the faith in my convictions here.
Okay, two games on Monday with very similar. We'll do Bills Falcons because it'll give us an opportunity to talk about Bills. The Bills are 4-9. They're heading to Atlanta with 7-4. 4.5 is the spread. We talked about what went right for the Patriots. What kind of went wrong for the Bills the other night? Because obviously that's a bad loss. You know, divisional rival at home on prime time. Everybody's talking about them, and they lose.
Yeah, well, the Patriots held them to 20 points, you know, which for a Josh Allen team is doing pretty well. James Cook, Josh Allen, and they did a nice job of containing Allen from making big plays. They did a good job up front against the Bills' offensive line, which I'm not totally convinced Atlanta can do. But if the Patriots can do it, you would think that the Falcons can do it as well. And the question to me is, can Penix play with as much control as May did against that Buffalo defense? Now, I would check about Ed Oliver. I think Ed Oliver's still out. I think Milano is going to be out as well, which gives Atlanta a bit of an advantage. They're also coming off a bye, so they've had an extra week to prepare for Buffalo. And to know what they're doing. So they're getting 3.5 at home. I kind of like them as home dogs, with the 3.5. And I like this one to go over the 48.5 as well.
Okay. It does look like Ed Oliver will be out. No word on the other. Okay. We'll do best bets. Michael, if you would be
Yes.
as so kind, because I have a big complaint, but before
Last
why
week,
do yeah. You just do your thing.
last week, you stole the Chargers from me. Thank you very much,
That's what always
because
happens when you steal.
the Chargers were giving 2.5 points and lost by 17. so I was glad to get out from under that. John took the over in Tampa, Seattle, which was a fairly easy bet,
That
given that
really sailed, yeah, when you think about it, yeah.
73 points were scored in that game, and the over-under was 44.5. And I took the under in New England Buffalo, which was 49, and the two teams combined for 43. So going into this week, John and Kieran are both 3-2. I'm 4-1. John's best bet, and he took this one away from me as well, is the Patriots at New Orleans, giving New Orleans 3.5 points. So much the same situation as Atlanta Buffalo, except on a lower level, if you
Yes.
know what I mean. So how what
But
do
you know what
you
I'm going to give out
doing
about
there?
the Chargers? Just slightly on the Chargers, right? Because they actually is
Sure.
one of those games where they had time of possession was double to the Chargers. And you look back at and we've called them, we've kind of joked that they're kind of cock teases. But you saw
They
everything that's
are.
wrong with the Chargers. Justin Herbert had no time whatsoever. I mean, he looks up and the whole line is just crashing down in front of him. They hold the Commanders. The Commanders are punting from their own end zone. They hit the punter. They hit the kicker. Ladd McConkey runs one back straight into the end zone. It's called back for holding, I think. Justin Herbert's on the 5 yard line. They're at least going to get a field goal to bring them within one score if they don't get a touchdown and he throws an interception. It's like they do it to themselves every year. They kind of trick us into thinking that they're good. And now they've lost two games that they really shouldn't have. They really, on paper, it was the Giants, wasn't it, 2 weeks ago? It was the Giants 2 weeks ago. So yeah, they're off the list now. They're off.
You're
That's.
absolutely right. I mean, they do it every year. I have a good friend who's a Chargers fan, and he suffers and suffers. And you know, they lost two more starting linemen. All I think could come back. He might be able to play. I don't know if Pipkins was hurt. Becton was hurt. They already had lost Slater, obviously, before the season started. That's four of their five starting linemen, and everybody was saying the Chiefs better watch out because Harbaugh has put together a good offensive line, and that's going to make all the difference. He drafted Omarion Hampton. He's out now. He's gone to IR, which is one of the things that can happen when you don't have someone blocking for you. I just wanted to mention, too, if you brought it up, Washington against the Chargers. Jacory Crosky-Morett had a big game. He's like a seventh-round draft pick from Alabama State Hornets. And a lot of people were pushing him during preseason, saying, watch this kid. You know, he's going to be really good. And he certainly looked it in this.
He
But
looks really good, yeah.
I would avoid the Chargers at all costs against Miami. I'm so tempted. I looked at it and I said, oh, the Chargers against Miami. And Miami's getting 4.5. I said, oh,
2 weeks in a row
because
that I got you now.
Miami looked so soft, you know, in a game where they led big and then threw the lead away. They just played really soft against Carolina. And you know, Mike McDaniel starting all that kind of Ivy League nonconformist look on the sidelines is starting to really wear, I think. So, you know, I would just stay away from the Chargers for a week or so and see if they can balance out in
Okay.
Miami.
Who are you going to go with then this week? We know Bob's
Yeah,
going for it. Who are you going
no.
for?
I may be a bit. I'm tempted here, and in the end, I'm going to go with the over in Seattle Jacksonville. Although I was very tempted to take the under in Tennessee against the Raiders, which was 41-5 and probably is 39-5 today.
Okay, I was going to go with yours, but my second one is a game we didn't talk about, which is the Rams, the Ravens. I'm going to go over 44.5. The Ravens are all at sea really at the moment. And Mike, we've talked for longer than probably we expected, or it's probably on the longest pod, but we'll end maybe with
Oh.
that. Just a very quick question to you. What is going on with the Ravens?
Lot, some injuries, some defensive problems with guys who aren't playing up to expectations, I think, and some offensive problems brought about by, I don't know whether it's play calling, people catching up to what they do. Lamar Jackson is out. Derrick Henry seems to have hit some sort of wall. But that can be the offensive line not doing the job for him. You know, the two games they lost when he fumbled were both caught. The fumbles were both caused by great players making great plays. Ed Oliver, for example, in the Buffalo game. You know, it wasn't so much a fumble as Ed Oliver just stood him up and ripped the ball out of his hands. But they made an interesting trade with the Har brothers. Made an interesting trade last night. Odafe Owe, the pass rusher, goes from Baltimore to the Chargers, who need a pass rusher, and Alohi Gilman, who's a safety, goes to Baltimore, who need help in the secondary. And he's a good pickup for the, I mean, they're both good pickups. It's one of those trades where you think, well, this could work for both teams. He'll let Hamilton, when Hamilton's back, Hamilton wasn't playing last week as well. He'll let him play closer to the middle of the field, you know, some slot corner on tight ends, some linebacker-like functions. So I think this could work out for both teams, especially because Khalil Mack is still out for the Chargers. So it gives him a pass rusher to replace Mack. So you know that to me, I love that kind of thing. Playing junior GM, you know, when you especially when it's done between two brothers, you
Two
know, and you
brothers,
say,
yeah.
hey, brother John, who do you got available?
You need a
Give me a
safety?
break now. Yeah, can you make me a deal on a defensive back, you know?
I'm going to go over 44.5. Texas absolutely shredded Baltimore at the weekend.
Yeah.
And like armchair fan. Oh, Lamar Jackson's out. Well, last time I checked, Lamar Jackson didn't play defense. So there's no real reason that Mar being out should mean that they're giving up a touchdown in nearly every drive. So until I see something improve from them, the over is the way to go. Mike, thank you so much. As I said, we've probably talked a little bit longer than we expected. Because
I tried to talk as much as John would have.
Oh, burn. You know, we can say what we like about him because he's a notoriously vain man who will not listen to a pod when he's not on it. So, I mean, you know, I hate John. There you go. Let's see. We'll ask him next week if he heard that. Did you hear anything on the pod, John, where I said I didn't like him? I know. So.
Yeah, especially good to keep it right to the end. Make him right listen the all end. The way through.
Yeah. Oh, this is the first 5 minutes. Okay, listen, okay. That is it for another episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carson. Mike, thank you so much for joining me. If you're heading to the game, look, I hope it's no problems this time around. And I hope you enjoy. Should be a good one. Broncos Jets should get some scores on the doors. And best of luck with all the betting. Once again, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye for now.